high fly and fight, and forever in peace may you wave. You're the emblem of the land I love, the home of the free and the brave. Every heart beats true under red, white, and blue, where there's never a post or brand. But should old acquaintance be forgot, keep your eye on the grand old flag.
Well, as you should know by now, today, June 14th, is Flag Day. And it's a real treat to welcome back Dave Martucci to the program. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. It's great to have you back. Good to hear your voice again.
Thanks for having me.
I want to tell, I've of course pre-introduced you in the program this morning already, but for those who are just joining us, Dave is the Secretary Treasurer of the New England Vexillological Association. He's the past president of the North American Vexillological Association, and also a professional flag assessment and appraiser as well. And Dave, your link is still on our website. We're going to leave it there, too.
Great.
Yeah,
thanks.
Yeah. When you were with us last year, it wasn't really on Flag Day itself, I guess because of the weekend occurrence, but we talked about our flag a little bit, but we talked about flags in general, and I thought maybe this morning we would kind of zero in more on the grand old flag, as we just heard, or the Stars and Stripes, Old Glory. And one of the interesting things about our flag, you take a look at the flags of any other country and you say, well, that's their national flag, that's the flag of the nation. But actually, our flag is the first flag to be called a, quote, national flag. What does that mean, and what's the importance of that?
Well, that's right. Back in the 1770s, there was no concept of a national flag. Flags belonged to governments or armies or kings. When our flag was adopted, it became fairly quickly the property of the people rather than of the government. And it's still essentially that today. Most countries regulate their flags in very many ways, and we have very, very few regulations on our flag because of that concept that it doesn't really belong to the government at all.
I see. And so that kind of answers my next question, because there has been a lot of talk, or maybe there should be a lot of talk, about flag etiquette today. And a lot of folks say, well, you shouldn't do this with the flag. You shouldn't do that with the flag. You shouldn't have a flag, pair of swimming trunks that look like the flag, and things like that. That's never by rule or regulation or legislation. That's basically based, well, what is that based on? What is flag etiquette based on then in this country?
Well, flag etiquette is a you might say, a common sense way of dealing with your flag and how to approach its display and usage. Americans have always, in the past anyway, pretty much taken that kind of aspect of it into their own individual communities rather than having the government authorities rule on it. There have been attempts to pass flag etiquette laws, most of which have been overturned by the Supreme Court. At this point, the only way you really could legislate that would be by a constitutional amendment, but that would be the very opposite of the whole concept of the U.S. flag, in my opinion.
I think, yeah, I agree with that, and I think a lot of folks would agree with it once they understand it.
I think that all true Americans, I mean, I almost feel that that's not really the right term, because all people born here are true Americans in one sense or another, but all people who feel about the flag as our national treasure, I think they would basically treat it right. I don't have a worry. You know, if somebody's not flying the flag right, for example, they put it up and leave it up and it gets ragged and tattered. Around here anyway, somebody's neighbor is going to say something to them, and eventually they'll take it down and go down to Walmart and buy another one.
Yeah, exactly. Woodrow Wilson said on his 1915 Flag Day proclamation, "The things that the flag stands for were created by the experiences of a great people. Everything that it stands for was written by their lives. The flag is the embodiment, not of sentiment, but of history. Woodrow, and I kind of ran through some of the very, very early history of Flag Day, going back to 1885 with C.J. Segrand, I think, up in Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
But the whole thing basically began in schools, did it not?
That's right. Right. It was a way to get the school children of the day. You got to remember, at that time, there were quite a few immigrants into this country who didn't really know our history. And it was a way of introducing history through the graphic example of the various historic flags and the current flag.
And it just kind of snowballed from there. And
right.
And interestingly enough, Flag Day itself wasn't made official until Harry Truman signed a congressional legislation in 1949.
That's right.
Flag Day 1950 became set in stone, so to speak.
That's right.
It takes a long time for stuff to happen in this. You know, Memorial Day is another good example of that. Even the adoption of Francis Scott Key's national anthem, our national anthem, Star-Spangled Banner, took, over 100 years. It was in the 1930s that the national anthem was actually.
Yeah, that's right. And along the way, it had a lot of competition from other songs.
Yeah, and it kind of still does, doesn't it?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, that's right.
I always thought people say it's too hard to sing, and I always thought, well, you know, it has its origins in a drinking song. How
that's
hard
right.
can that be to sing? Well, let's get back to the flag itself.
Sure.
We've learned that it's the first flag to be called a national flag, going
right.
back to the 1700s.
And by the way, it was the French who actually used that term the first time in referring to our flag. During the French Revolution, they were considering what flag to adopt, and their concept was we should adopt a national flag like the Americans have. And the Americans didn't even know they had done it at that point.
Exactly. Well, that kind of brings us to another point. And this kind of goes back to our conversation last year. I remember last year we went through a real good discussion of what makes a good flag and mm-hmm. what makes a bad flag. Our flag is a pretty good flag because it serves as the model for other flags. Obviously, France, they even use the same colors.
That's right. The French flag was deliberately made in those colors as a complement to the United States flag. And there are many flags around the world today. If you look at a chart of flags, you'll see a number of them have red, white, and blue, and a number of them have stripes and a blue canton, and many, many, many of them have stars. Stars were not a feature, especially five-pointed stars, were not a feature of flags before ours.
Exactly. And well, speaking of the canton and the stars and the stripes, how many times has our flag actually changed since 1777?
Well, that's a great question, and there are really two answers to it. Officially, it's been 27 times that the flag's been modified, and the way it gets modified since 1818 is that on the 4th of July, following the admission of any states, new stars or a star are added to the flag, and that's the official change. Unofficially, there have been hundreds and hundreds of changes because people add stars for states that haven't yet been admitted, and sometimes they'll add one star when two states had been admitted if they're from that state, and so there have been unofficially many, many changes. On my website, which you have a link to, you can find a chart of over 200 different variants of the U.S. flag that have occurred in the past that relate to some of those unofficial changes as well as official ones.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a quick break here, Dave, and we'll come back. We'll talk about some more aspects of our American flag here. Dave Martucci is with us. Dave is a renowned vexillologist, and it's great to have him with us on the program here this morning on Flag Day. The Rand McNally IntelliRoute TND700 redefines truck navigation. Featuring a large, high-definition screen for more map detail, it's Rand McNally's largest and most advanced truck navigation unit. Stay organized with the new calendar and notepad features. The IntelliRoute TND700 with 35% more truck routing information than other GPS units is available at major truck stops and dealers nationwide. Or visit www.randmcnally.com/truckGPS to learn more. You've probably heard the news that housing is just skyrocketing all of a sudden. Things are looking good, and that's great for open deck trucking. But Max Campbell from Fikes Truckline, what are the other indicators that are looking up?
All of open deck trucking is just really expanding and coming on. Manufacturing, steel, coals, all of it is just starting to make much, much better lanes out there for everybody in. Lanes is what keeps people profitable and keeps them running.
DOD is on the uptick too, isn't it?
It is. A lot of DOD is moving, and you know, the basic sticks and bricks that you use to build houses.
Open deck trucking is wide open at Fikes, connecting people with purpose. Fikes Truck Line, 800-863-4537.
Hi, Buckaroos. This is Jerry Jeff Walker, and I'm a road dog, just like you. Keep on trucking with Sirius XM Radio. Down the road in a cloud of
smoke. Trucker mats are the official mats of Trick My Truck, and you can trick yours out too. CB handle, your name, your pet's picture, the color scheme of your truck. You get the idea. You tell them what you want, and they'll make it for you right there in Nebraska. That's right. Trucker mats are American made, and you're calling direct to the factory. No middlemen, so the prices are low. 866-874-2560. 866-874-2560. Or go to DaveNemo.com, click on Trucker Mats. It's about 12 now till the top of the hour. Don't forget Canada Calling in the next hour with Joanne Ritchie, the Executive Director of OBAC, the Owner-Operator Business Association of Canada. And in our last hour this morning, we'll spend some time with our good friend Rick Gobble from Gobble Transportation Safety. And of course, it's safety, compliance, and common sense. We'll talk about a recent meeting, well, last Friday, as a matter of fact. Rick was at a meeting with some of the folks at FMCSA on CSA 2010, and we'll kind of get a look inside that meeting. Dave Martucci is with us right now. Dave, of course, a well-known vexillologist, and we're talking about flags, well, our flag. But I guess, Dave, we ought to revisit the word vexillologist, a word I couldn't even pronounce last year when you first came on the program.
It's a tongue twister.
It is. And what's the origin of the word? How does a flag, F-L-A-G, wind up to be vexillology?
Well, the basic root of the word goes back to the Romans, who had an emblem used in the Roman legions that was known as the vexillum, and it was the first symbol that attached significance to the cloth rather than to the pole.
Ah, okay.
And, of course, the olologist is a Greek root meaning study of.
Mm-hmm. All right, vexillologist. You know, you mentioned 27 official changes to the flag.
Right.
And then hundreds of other variations, as you call them, patriotic crafts projects that lasted from about 1777 until about the First World War. Was there something about the First World War that kind of stopped all of that sort of thing?
Well, in 1912, President Taft issued the first specification as to what the American flag was supposed to look like. And prior to that, nobody ever issued specifications, for specific design features. And since then, the presidents have always issued a proclamation determining what the exact pattern and size of the flag should be. And by the end of the First World War, everybody got used to the standardized pattern. And although there's still some, homemade variants around, they're now quite rare rather than quite common as they used to be, particularly in the 19th century.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything essentially wrong with that? Doing that?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah. So, in other words, if you want to kind of make a stylized version of the flag, you...
Well, if you look at the actual resolution that established the flag, all it says is that there's a star for each state, 13 red and white horizontal stripes in a blue field that has the stars. And as long as you got the right number of stars, that flag is official as any other flag.
A lot of writers, a lot of poets, a lot of musicians have basically tried to interpret what the red, white, and blue actually stand for. Do they actually stand for anything?
Well, you know, that's one of the beauties of our flag. The government has never issued any official symbolism. And it's entirely left up to our imagination and our feelings as to what those colors mean. We can interpret them really in any way we see fit. And from generation to generation, those interpretations probably have changed some. But it's really, really up to us to figure that out. And nobody has to tell us what it means.
Exactly, exactly. Obviously, the stars stand for... The states that we have now, the number of the stripes. And so in terms of numbers, there is an actual designation, but the colors don't really have any designation.
Well, even those aspects of it have never been officially prescribed.
Oh, really? Okay.
The flag has 13 stripes, but that's all the resolution said. I mean, obviously, we think of the original 13 states, and that's the obvious interpretation. But there's no official designation of that. And likewise with the stars, the only official symbolism that's ever been established for any part of the flag was in the first flag resolution that says the stars represent a new constellation. And that's it. That's all we know.
Yes, okay. I see what you're saying. I remember those words now that you
right.
said. Yeah.
And we add a star for each state, and obviously the stars represent the states, but because they represent a new constellation, they represent something greater than the individual states that they obviously represent. And in terms of the day, 1777, obviously it meant a new way of governing.
Yes, so the numbers add up to a sum larger than the parts.
Right.
Very interesting.
That could be reflected by our national motto, which is E Pluribus Unum, which means out of many, one,
mm-hmm.
which is basically the same concept.
Yeah, exactly. Going back to other flags and the fact that our flag was different in terms of it being a people's flag, the people's flag, a national flag, and not a flag of a king or a family or whatever. Most countries, and maybe they still do, I'm not sure, but we have a flag that stands alone. We don't have a marine flag.
We're highly unusual in that respect. There are other countries that do that nowadays, but we're really outnumbered by the countries that have a flag for every purpose. Great Britain is probably the biggest example of that, and they've inspired most of the other nations that follow suit, where they have a different flag for use on land, at sea, for their military, for their navy, for their air force. They all fly different flags. All of them are considered national flags in a way, but they're all very different. And here we use the same flag for every purpose, which most countries do not do that. I mean, there are some, but for the most part, most countries have a different flag for government usage and for private usage and et cetera, et cetera.
We mentioned the national anthem just a little bit earlier. And of course, it's now the national anthem. It wasn't for the first half of its life.
Right.
But Francis Scott Key wrote that as a poem set to Anacreus in Heaven, I think was the name of the song. And there's been some pressure, as you say, through the decades to challenge the national anthem. Are there any serious challenges to our flag in our society right now? That you know
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, there've been proposals over the years by people to do our flag design differently. They generally include stripes and stars, but in different arrangements. There are some people who would arrange the stars in the shape of either an eagle or a cross or the letters USA or things like that. But I don't think there's anything really serious out there. I think most people are content with the way the flag looks, and I think that if there was ever a serious reason or feeling to change it, it would probably just happen spontaneously.
We just had Memorial Day. We always do a special program on Memorial Day here on the show, Dave. And one of the fascinating aspects about Memorial Day is that you can't really tell where it actually started. You know, essentially, there may have been a group of Confederate widows who began a tradition there, and then some other places joined. You have the Logan Order number 11 from John Logan, Supreme Commander of the Grand Army. What I'm getting at is that Memorial Day has sort of a murky beginning history. What about Betsy Ross and the flag? I mean, there are so many stories. There's a great tradition there. And then you hear, well, no, that's not really true. Do we really know about Betsy and the flag for sure?
Well, there's a lot of legend involved in that story, and separating the facts from the legend is a somewhat challenging job because there are additional materials that have been discovered over the years. The fact of the matter is, if you boil out all the talk and just look at what we know for sure, we know that Betsy lived during that time. We know that she did make some flags for the Pennsylvania Navy. We don't have any record of her making American flags at the time, although that's not even right. Her grandson claimed that she did, and she probably did. I really wouldn't doubt that she made flags at the time. Did she make the first American flag is the question, because that's what the focus of the legend is. And the answer to that is, well, in a sense, yes, and in another sense, no. At the time that the flag resolution appeared, the main reason for its appearance was to outfit ships that were being commissioned by the fledgling United States Navy. And so they had to get some flags in order to identify themselves to the rest of the world. And it's believed by vexillologists, and there's some evidence to support this, that orders went out to anybody who was making flags at the time, because there were a number of ships being commissioned all at the same time. And so there were probably several women in Philadelphia who made the first flag for these ships. Now, did one of them make the absolute first flag? Well, I suppose that's true. Do we know who that is? Probably not. We know who the suspects are. There are at least three women who were known to have made flags for the Congress at the time. And then there was also Betsy Ross. And did she make one of those flags? Likely. But we'll never really know the truth.
So Betsy may be a person who represents a lot of people and maybe the population in general.
Yeah, I think that's true. She's representative of those people at that time. Although one of the people who clearly and definitely made some of the earliest United States flags is a woman by the name of Rebecca Young. And her daughter was Mary Pickersgill, and Mary Pickersgill made the Star Spangled Banner that inspired Francis Scott Key to write his poem.
Wow, wow. That is fascinating. Dave, thank you so much for being with us on the program.
Well, thanks very much. I really appreciate it.
Dave Martucci, everybody, and we'll close out our segment with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thanks again to Dave Martucci, and you can get to his website by going to davenemo.com and go to Web Links of Interest in that middle column, and you'll see his link there. He's got a lot of fascinating information on his website. Vexillologist. I love that word now. Vexillologist. Still don't know how to quite spell it without looking at it, though. Dave Martucci. Flag Day, June 14th. We'll be right back after news and weather with Canada Calling.